It's my pleasure to introduce Professor Mike Cates. Mike is Vocation Professor of Mathematics in Cambridge, and I don't know if I can assume you all know what that means, but the second one was Newton. And which number are you?
19.
19. Very, very happy to have you here today. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so I don't know whether I'll use up all of my time or not. But I was just going to say a few things about a working relationship that we've developed with the Turing now Newton Gateway team, and the way that's worked for us and how it's helped. And I will intersperse that with possibly a few musings about the nature of academic industrial interactions in my field, which is soft condensed matter. And I'll say a little bit about what that is. This is a picture of Sir Sam Edwards, who was my former PhD advisor, died in 2015, just before I arrived here after 20 years in Edinburgh. So he is a founding father of the theoretical science of soft materials. And soon after my arrival, we decided to set up something we call the Edwards Centre for Soft Matter. So that is a virtual lab which crosses the boundaries between five or six different departments. So includes damped, but it's not exclusively theoretical or mathematical. This number of PIs is out of date now, but we have a large number of people on the staff of the university spread across those departments, and an equally large number of postdocs and students who are affiliated members of this virtual lab. And so for those of you who may not know what kind of things we do in soft matter research, here's a list of the types of materials we're talking about, and many of these have pretty direct industrial applications. So colloids and suspensions are in all kinds of processing of bulk materials, including ceramic precursors and things like that, polymers and gels. Of course, we eat soft matter all the time. All kinds of things, as large parts of the so-called fast-moving consumer goods sector. And also liquid crystals, which are, of course, in display devices, all of your smartphones, and increasingly also biological, biomimetic materials, and work on those topics is beginning to feed back into some of the more technological areas. And across these kind of classes of materials, one can pull out themes in soft composites and soft nanomaterials within the university. So the Edwards Centre has a number of activities, but the one that relates to today's session is something we call the Edwards Symposia. So these are an annual three-day event which are held at the Newton Institute and or the Centre for Mathematical Sciences, so just depending on room availability. They have received core funding after the first one from Unilever, which has been immensely helpful to us. We can focus on having a good meeting rather than endlessly raising money. And I'll come back to that later because it's quite important, I think. And the focus of these meetings is on basic science, particularly the more mathematical end, so theoretical and computer modeling, but not exclusively that, so we have experimental talks as well. But the speakers are usually chosen because of some tangible link between what they're talking about and industrially significant problems. And the other important point was, though, that we have this slate of academic speakers at each meeting. There's also a number of industry speakers, and we try to maximize the number of industry participants, and that's something which I will come back to, because it's not always that easy, something perhaps to do with it being a three-day meeting. So the involvement of the Turing now Newton Gateway team has been really substantial. So the academic organizers of these have been myself, Mark Warner, who is here, and Rafi Blumenfeld. So we are all hopelessly disorganized, as I'm sure Mark will agree. And it is incredibly valuable to anyone on the academic side who wants to create a structure that allows them to interact successfully with industrial partners, to have a team of people that they can tap into who are skilled in not only running an event, but also in actually brokering partnerships as well. So Gateway team is involved with the academics in planning the program, particularly in relation to the industrial participants. They do all the publicity for us. The branding, it's important that this is seen as a Turing now Newton event as well as an Edwards Centre event. And then all of the pre-meeting registration and also on-site logistics as well, financials, catering, etc. So this is an enormous weight off the mind of academics who can then just think about who to invite, if you see what I mean. And then there's another thing which, you know, we wouldn't even really do properly, which is the post-meeting feedback, which they the Gateway team digest for us and come up with tangible suggestions about how to improve the format. So this has been very successful. The timetable, our meetings are in September, so we have this planning cycle, which I won't perhaps go through, except to say that there is something which has emerged from this, which is that there is actually a mismatch in the planning cycle of academics and industry partners, and this is something which Jane particularly instructed us in from the beginning. So one has to do this kind of juggle to get the academic speakers lined up, and then after that, the industry people lined up, typically because many industrial people are simply not able to commit to an event which is more than 6 months ahead, whereas the opposite is true for academics, typically. So there is this interesting mismatch. Here's just a list of some of the companies in various of the sectors that I mentioned earlier that have been involved. And several of these were, again, as I say, brokered by the Gateway team. Others were, if you like, introduced by the academic side as potential speakers. So what I want to do is spend just a couple of minutes saying how the way that the industrial partners, specifically the speakers at our meetings, how the role and the types of talks we ask from them has evolved over the years, because this has definitely been a learning curve for us. So in the first year, we asked industry speakers to give a sectoral overview. So they were meant to stand back from their own individual company and say something about the bits of science that mattered in their whole sector, and that the talks were fine. They did what we asked for, but the academics were left sort of slightly wanting something more to grip onto in terms of real technical problems that the industrial partners could feed into the academic realm. And one of the key comments, of course, is that the knowledge transfer activity is not just from the maths and the sciences into industries. It is, at least in our field, equally in the other direction, because industry is a constant provider of unexpected problems that feeds the mind in a way that is important in a field which is otherwise so diverse. So to know that problem A is industrially important, problem B is less important, is a very good way of choosing which problems you actually want to work on. In the second year, we tried something different, which I think, with hindsight, we made a mistake, which was try to confuse the funding of the meeting with the industrial partnership. So we basically tried to persuade people to pay to come and tell us their problems in a way which we hoped the audience would then be able to help them to solve. So I think it was a struggle, firstly, to get people to come on those terms, and secondly, I think the resulting talks were probably less inspiring than we'd hoped they might be. So we decoupled those two things, and since then we've been asking the industry speakers to just simply show us some industry-facing scientific challenge of their choosing, which obviously is likely to impact on their company, could be broader. And we've also started adding in additional parts of the program. The first one was a roundtable on licensing versus spin-out, which was particularly interesting to some of the younger academics who have little experience of either, or indeed many of the older have little experience of either. And then this year we're continuing with that same format of industry-facing science challenges from the industry speakers, and then a roundtable, this time on sustainable plastics. So we will be kind of varying this roundtable in future to cover different types of topic. So there's also poster sessions, and these have also evolved a bit. So these are, in the first year we just had posters. Obviously, there's posters are a good way of targeting early career researchers, in particular if you can give them a piece of paper which says that they've given a poster, and also if they're presenting, they usually find it easier to get funding to attend a meeting. So it's very important to have a way of presenting for almost everybody who wants to present, and that the natural format is the poster for that. We then added something which are these elevator pitches, so that's a 3-minute talk from each poster presenter, optional, and these are quite fun, actually. We have an afternoon, and it's a it properly chaired, the time limit can actually be turned to advantage. So everybody likes those, and we've had lots of very good feedback on the poster pictures, and we've also been able, thanks to some further support from the Royal Society of Chemistry and the Lichtman family, to introduce some early career prizes as well. So what I want to do is just spend a couple of minutes talking about some of the issues around the industry participation in these meetings, because, again, as I've said, there's been a kind of learning curve, I think, from the at least from the viewpoint of the academic organisers, and I think many of the academic participants as well. So for the industrial speakers, there obviously is a problem with confidentiality and what they're allowed to tell us. So it seems this seems problematic in a way that I hadn't completely anticipated. It's quite easy to say, oh, well, everything you say is kind of confidential. Nobody in the audience is allowed to disseminate it outside. This is something which Gordon conferences do. But the problem is persuading speakers that to believe you on that. And unless you're talking to someone extremely senior as your speaker, there's always or often an issue of getting somebody higher up in the company to agree that such and such a presentation can be made. And all of these are kind of friction, I would say. They are obstacles to fluid communication. The one I wasn't expecting was the fact that increasingly, at least in the sectors that I've been talking about, industry scientists, especially the mid and early career ones, are less and less used to giving presentations in front of an audience of anyone outside their own company. And I've noticed quite people are quite well respected in our part of the academic community as visible contributors to the science, who were actually extremely nervous about speaking to a bunch of academics in this room. And I find that sort of disappointing, and is related to another issue that I'll raise in a minute. As opposed to the industrial speakers, who are mostly invited and tend to agree to come once they get a clear invitation to do that, in terms of industrial participants, there's lots of issues around, firstly, perhaps the fact that this is a meeting which is two nights away. People obviously need a bit of travel money to come to such a meeting if they're in a company, and it sounds kind of, to an academic, these look like tiny sums of money, and yet somehow, in many companies, there's a sort of hassle factor of getting the boss to agree that you can have 2 days, or right, in fact, 3 days away from your desk to come to a meeting and so on. And I think the issue which worries me most, and hopefully this is not true across every area of mathematical science, but seems to be a problem that's emerged in our field, and perhaps because of the fact that it's most of the sectors I've described are relatively mature, although there's lots of important science going on in them, is there seems to be this sort of drifting philosophy among companies away from being their research staff, away from them being part of a global research enterprise in which your understanding of everybody else's science is part of your basic toolkit that you have to keep up to date, to a different model where the company is a purchaser of academic research when it needs it. And this affects companies' attitudes not only to participation but also to a sponsorship, and whether to what extent they feel the meeting is worthwhile. So this sounds very negative, but I'm deliberately pulling out some of the issues which I think are interesting, because they are challenges in the way academics and industry partners do collaborate. The basic structure, though, and not just the format, but the content of these meetings have, by common consensus, been a huge success, firstly for our field, also for the Edwards Center, and also the participation of the Gateway as well. So that's the story I wanted to tell you, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mike. There's time for a question, perhaps. Yes?
Yeah, a lot of the companies that you had up on your slide there were, as you say, established larger corporations. Yes. So how do you get the smaller companies and the emerging industries to engage more and find out what their problems are that need solving?
Yes. Well, what we found is that an afternoon is a better format than a 2 or 3 day meeting for that. And then in particular with the local ecosystem of spin-out companies and smaller units, an afternoon, maybe with some kind of speed dating event or something, you know, something within it that allows rapid brokering of personal contacts is easier to get people to agree to do because it feels like less of a commitment to them, which is completely understandable. But so we do that as well, of course, and that's just, you know, a separate part of what we do with the Edwards Centre. So I think that's where you have to start. But it seems a pity that if that's the only, you know, if you can't get enough of a grip on people to have them sit through some very good lectures by very, you know, major international scientists of direct relevance to their company.
Any more questions?
Okay.
Yeah.
When you establish collaboration with the industrial partner and they sponsor certain project, how do you share IP?
There's different models depending on the level of financial contribution, essentially. And the university has a number of kind of templates which are reasonably well established. The fact, though, that IP that an agreement has to be reached every time you do this is itself quite a big obstacle. So the more that can be set into type 1, 2, 3 standard agreements, and this is something that with some of the bigger companies there are framework agreements which have this very clearly laid out. And then for anyone in the university, it's quite easy. If you're trying to do this with a new partner, it actually is quite another piece of quite big friction is just to get the IP sorted out.
Yes. Last question.
So, coming from a metrology background and a government laboratory, thinking of myself as an industrial partner, one of the things that I'm trying to get the academic community is to co-own some of the challenges that we have, you know.
Yes.
And so instead of us having to say, keep on feeding you these challenges and things like that, you start off and then you build your own momentum and you come back to us and say, crikey, we've been working on this for the last 3 months. We think this might be of interest to you, you know.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think that's that's partly what we're trying to do here, and it's slightly frustrating when, you know, because the benefit of that on the receiving side, if you like, on the industrial or your MPL, I imagine, but is potentially very great. And then what I find a little frustrating is if people who possibly could persuade us to work on their problems don't feel it's worth their while coming. And that's sort of slightly annoying.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.